whilst the town was yet a baby. He had meant to buy in big. It had always been his wish and desire to be a big voice, and he had to live nearly 30 years to find a chance. Where was Janie's papa and mama?
They dead, I reckon. I wouldn't know about them 'cause my grandma raised me. She dead, too.
She dead, too? Well, who's looking after a little girl child like you?
I'm married.
You married? You ain't hardly old enough to be weaned. I bet you still crave sugar tits, don't you?
Yeah, and I makes and sucks them when the notion strikes me. Drink sweetening water, too.
I love that myself. Never expects to get too old to enjoy syrup sweetening water when it's cool and nice.
Us got plenty syrup in the barn. Ribbon cane syrup, if you so desires.
Where your husband at, Miss,
My name is Janie Mae Killix, since I got married. Used to be Janie Mae Crawford. My husband is going to buy a mule for me to plow. He left me cutting up seed potatoes.
You behind a plow? You ain't got no more business with a plow than a hog has got with a holiday. You ain't got no business cutting up no seed potatoes, neither.
A pretty doll baby like you is made to sit on the front porch and rock and fan yourself and eat potatoes that other folks plant just special for you.
Janie laughed and drew 2 quarts of syrup from the barrel, and Joe Starks pumped the water bucket full of cool water. They sat under the tree and talked. He was going on down to the new part in Florida, but no harm to stop and chat. He later decided he needed a rest anyway. It would do him good to rest a week or two. Every day after that, they managed to meet in the scrub oaks across the road and talk about when he would be a big ruler of things, with her reaping the benefits.
Janie pulled back a long time because he did not represent sunup and pollen and blooming trees, but he spoke for far horizon. He spoke for change and chance. Still, she hung back. The memory of Nanny was still powerful and strong.
Janie, if you think I aims to toll you off and make a dog out of you, you's wrong. I wants to make a wife out of you.
You mean that, Joe?
The day you put your hand in mine, I wouldn't let the sun go down on a single. I'm a man with principles. You ain't never known what it was to be treated like a lady, and I wants to be the one to show you. Call me Jody, like you do sometime.
Jody, she smiled up at him. But supposing...
Leave disposing and everything else to me. I'll be down this road a little after sunup tomorrow morning to wait for you. You come go with me. Then all the rest of your natural life, you can live like you oughta. Kiss me and shake your head. When you do that, your plentiful hair breaks like day. Janie debated the matter that night in bed.
Logan, you sleep?
If I was, you'd be done woke me up calling me.
I was thinking real hard about us, about you and me.
It's about time. You's powerful independent round here sometime, considering.
Considering what, for instance?
Considering you's born in a carriage out no top to it, and your mama and you been born and raised in the white folks' backyard.
You didn't say all that when you was begging Nanny for me to marry you.
I thought you would appreciate good treatment. Thought I'd take and make something out of you. You think you's white folks by the way you act.
Supposing I was to run off and leave you sometime.
There. Janie had put words in his held-in fears. She might run off, sure enough. The thought put a terrible ache in Logan's body,
but he thought it best to put on scorn.
Oh, I'm getting sleepy, Jay. Don't talk no more. 'Tain't too many men's would trust you knowing your folks like they do.
Well, I might take and find somebody that did trust me and leave you.
Shucks. 'Tain't no more fools like me. A whole lot of men's will grin in your face, but they ain't going to work and feed you. You won't get far and you won't be long. When that big gut reach over and grab that little one, you'll be too glad to come back here.
You don't take nothing to count but sow belly and cornbread.
I'm sleepy. I don't aim to worry my gut into a fiddle string with no sposing.
He flopped over, resentful in his agony, and pretended sleep. He hoped that he had hurt her as she had hurt him. Janie got up with him the next morning and had the breakfast halfway done when he bellowed from the barn.
Janie! Logan called harshly. Come here, me move this manure pile before the sun gets hot. You don't take a bit of interest in this place. 'Tain't no use in fooling around in that kitchen all day long.
Janie walked to the door with a pan in her hand, still stirring the cornmeal dough, and looked towards the barn. The sun from ambush was threatening the world with red daggers, but the shadows were gray and solid-looking around the barn. Logan, with his shovel, looked like a black bear doing some clumsy dance on his hind legs.
You don't need my help out there, Logan. You's in your place and I'm in mine.
You ain't got no particular place. It's wherever I need you. Get a move on you and dead quick.
My mama didn't tell me I was born in no hurry. So what business I got rushing now? Anyhow, that ain't what you's mad about. You's mad 'cause I don't fall down and wash up these 60 acres of ground you got. You ain't done me no favor by marrying me, and if that's what you call yourself doing, I don't thank you for it. You's mad 'cause I'm telling you what you already knowed.
Logan dropped his shovel and made two or three clumsy steps toward the house, then stopped abruptly.
Don't you change too many words with me this morning, Janie. Do I take and change ends with you? Here I just as good as take you out of the white folks' kitchen and set you down on your royal diastica, and you take and low-rate me. I'll take hold of that axe and come in there and kill you. You better drop in there. I'm too honest and hard-working for anybody in your family. That's the reason you don't want me.
The last sentence was half a sob and half a cry.
I guess some low-life nigga is grinning in your face and lying to you. God damn your hide.
Janie turned from the door without answering and stood still in the middle of the floor without knowing it. She turned wrong side out, just standing there and feeling. When the throbbing calmed a little, she gave Logan's speech a hard thought and placed it beside other things she had seen and heard. When she had finished with that, she dumped the dough on the skillet and smoothed it over with her hand. She wasn't even angry. Logan was accusing her of her mama, her grandmama, and her feelings, and she couldn't do a thing about any of it. The sow belly in the pan needed turning. She flipped it over and shoved it back. A little cold water in the coffee pot to settle it. Turned the whole cake with a plate and then made a little laugh. What was she losing so much time for? A feeling of sudden newness and change came over her. Janie hurried out of the front gate and turned south. Even if Joe was not there waiting for her, the change was bound to do her good. The morning road air was like a new dress that made her feel the apron tied around her waist. She untied it and flung it on a low bush beside the road and walked on, picking flowers and making a bouquet. After that, she came to where Joe Starks was waiting for her with a hired rig. He was very solemn and helped her to the seat beside him. With him on it, it sat like some high ruling chair. From now on until death, she was going to have flower dust and springtime sprinkled over everything. A bee for her bloom. Her old thoughts were going to come in handy now, but new words would have to be made and said to fit them. Green Cove Springs, he told the driver. So they were married there before sundown, just like Joe had said, with new clothes of silk and wool. They sat on the boarding house porch and saw the sun plunge into the same crack in the earth from which the night emerged. On the train the next day, Joe didn't make many speeches with rhymes to her, but he bought her the best things the butcher had, like apples and a glass lantern full of candies. Mostly he talked about plans for the town when he got there. They were bound to need somebody like him. Janie took a lot of looks at him, and she was proud of what she saw. Kind of portly like rich white folks. Strange trains and people and places didn't scare him neither. When they got off the train at Maitland, he found a buggy to carry them over to the colored town right away. It was early in the afternoon when they got there, so Joe said they must walk over the place and look around. They locked arms and strolled from end to end of the town. Joe noted the scant dozen of shame-faced houses scattered in the sand and palmetto roots and said, God, they call this a town? But 'tain't nothing but a raw place in the woods. It's a whole heap littler than I thought, Janie admitted her disappointment. Just like I thought, Joe said. A whole heap of talk and nobody doing nothing. Where's the mayor? He asked somebody. I want to speak with the mayor. Two men who were sitting on their shoulder blades under a huge live oak tree almost sat upright at the tone of his voice. They stared at Joe's face, his clothes, and his wife. Where y'all come from in such a big haste? Lee Coker asked. Middle Georgie, Starks answered briskly. Joe Starks is my name, from in and through Georgie. You and your daughter going to join with us in fellowship? The other reclining figure asked. Mighty glad to have you. Hicks is the name. Governor Amos Hicks from Beaufort, South Carolina. Free, single, disengaged. My God, I ain't nowhere near old enough to have no grown daughter. This here is my wife. Hicks sank back and lost interest at once. Where's the mayor? Starks persisted. I wants to talk with him. You's a mite too previous for that, Coker told him. Us ain't got none yet. Ain't got no mayor. Well, who tells y'all what to do? Nobody. Everybody's grown, and then again, I reckon us just ain't thought about it. I know I ain't. I did think about it one day, Hicks said dreamily, but then I forgot it and ain't thought about it since then. No wonder things ain't no better, Joe commented. I'm buying in here, buying in big. Soon as we find some place to sleep tonight, us men folks got to call people together and form a committee. Then we can get things moving around here. I can point you where you can sleep, Hicks offered. Man got his house done, Bill, and his wife ain't come yet. Starks and Janie moved off in the direction indicated, with Hicks and Coker boring into their backs with looks. That man talks like a section foreman, Coker commented. He's mighty compelment. Shucks, said Hicks. My bridges is just as long as his, but that wife of his, I'm a son of a compunction if I don't go to Georgia and get me one just like her. What with? With my talk, man. It takes money to feed pretty women. They gets a lavish of talk. Not like mine. They love to hear me talk because they can't understand it. My cold talking is too deep, too much cold to it. You don't believe me, do you? You don't know the women I can get to my command. You ain't never seen me when I'm out pleasuring and giving pleasure. It's a good thing he married her before she seen me. I can be some trouble when I take an ocean. I'm a bitch's baby around lady people. I'd much rather see all that than to hear about it. Come on, let's go see what he gonna do about this town. They got up and sauntered over to where Starks was living for the present. Already the town had found the strangers. Joe was on the porch talking to a small group of men. Janie could be seen through the bedroom window getting settled. Joe had rented the house for a month. The men were all around him, and he was talking to them by asking questions. What's the real name of the place? Some say West Maitland, and some say Eatonville. That's 'cause Cap'n Eaton give us some land along with Mr. Lawrence, but Cap'n Eaton give the first piece. How much they give? Oh, about 50 acres. How much has y'all got now? Oh, about the same. That ain't near enough. Who owns the land joining on to what you got? Cap'n Eaton? Well, where is this Cap'n Eaton? Over there in Maitland, except when he go visiting or something. Let me speak to my wife a minute, and I'm going to see the man. You cannot have no town without some land to build it on. Y'all ain't got enough here to cuss a cat on without getting a mouthful of hair. He ain't got no more land to give away. You need plenty of money if you wants any more. I expects to pay him. The idea was funny to them, and they wanted to laugh. They tried hard to hold it in, but enough incredulous laughter burst out of their eyes and leaked from the corners of their mouths to inform anyone of their thoughts. So Joe walked off abruptly. Most of them went along to show him the way and to be there when his bluff was called. Hicks didn't go far. He turned back to the house as soon as he felt he wouldn't be missed from the crowd and mounted the porch.
Evening, Miss Starks.
Good evening.
You reckon you going to like round here?
I reckon so.
Anything I can do to help out, why, you can call on me.
Much obliged.
There was a long, dead pause. Janie was not jumping at her chance like she ought to. Looked like she didn't hardly know he was there. She needed waking up.
Folks must be mighty closed-mouthed where you come from.
That's right, but it must be different at your home.
He was a long time thinking, but finally he saw and stumbled down the steps with a surly,
bye.
Goodbye.
That night, Coker asked him about it.
I saw you when you ducked back into Stark's house.
Well, how did you make out?
Who, me? I ain't been near the place, man. I've been down to the lake trying to catch me a fish. That woman ain't so awfully pretty nohow when you take the second look at her. I had to sort of pass by the house on the way back and seen her good. T'ain't nothing to her except that long hair. And anyhow, I done took a liking to the man. I wouldn't harm him at all. She ain't half as pretty as a gal I run off left up in South Carolina. Hicks, I'd get mad and say you was lying if I didn't know you so good. You just talking to consolate yourself by word of mouth. You got a willing mind, but you too light behind. A whole heap of men seen the same thing you seen, but they got better sense than you. Now, you ought to know you can't take no woman like that from no man like him. A man that ups and buys 200 acres of land at one whack and pays cash for it? No. He didn't buy it sure enough. He sure did. Come off with the papers in his pocket. He done called a meeting on his porch tomorrow. Ain't never seen no such a colored man before in all my born days. He's going to put up a store
and get a post office from the government. That irritated Hicks, and he didn't know why. He was the average mortal. It troubled him to get used to the world one way and then suddenly have it turn different. He wasn't ready to think of colored people in post offices yet. He laughed boisterously.
Y'all led that straight, Doc. Tell y'all any old lie. A colored man sitting up in a post office.
He made an obscene sound.
He's liable to do it, too, Hicks. I hope so, anyhow. Us colored folks are too envious of one another. That's how come us don't get no farther than us do. Us talks about the white man keeping us down. Shucks! He don't have to. Us keeps our own self down. Now, who said I didn't want the man to get us a post office? He can be the king of Jerusalem for all I care. Still and all, t'ain't no use in telling lies just because a heap of folks don't know no better. Your common sense ought to tell you the white folks ain't gonna allow him to run no post office. That we don't know, Hicks. He say he can, and I believe he know what he's talking about. Now, I reckon if colored folks got their own town, they can have post office and whatsoever they please, regardless. And then again, I don't expect the white folks way off yonder. Give a damn. Let's just wait and see. Oh, I'm waiting all right. Expects to keep on waiting till hell freeze over. Oh, get reconciled. That woman don't want you. You got to learn that all the women in the world ain't been brought up on no Tepentine steel and no sawmill camp. There's some women that just ain't for you to broach. You can't get up with no fish sandwich.
They argued a bit more, then went on to the house where Joe was and found him in his shirt sleeves, standing with his legs wide apart, asking questions and smoking a cigar.
"Where's the closest sawmill?"
he was asking Tony Taylor.
"About 7 miles gone towards Apopka," Tony told him. "Thinking about building right away?"
"My God, yeah, but not the house I specs to live in. That can wait till I make up my mind where I want to locate it. I figures we all needs a store in a big hurry."
"A store?" Tony shouted in surprise. "Yeah, a store right here in town with everything in it you need. 'Tain't a bit of use in everybody progging way over to Maitland to buy a little meal and flour when they could get it right here."
"That would be kind of nice, Brother Stoss, since you mention it."
"My God, of course it would. And then again, a store is good in other ways. I got to have a place to be at when folks come to buy land. And furthermore, everything has got to have a center and a heart to it. And the town ain't no different from nowhere else. It would be natural for the store to be meeting place for the town."
"That sure is the truth now.
Oh, we'll have this town all fixed up directly. Don't miss being at the meeting tomorrow."
Just about time for the committee meeting, called to meet on his porch next day, the first wagon load of lumber drove up, and Jody went to show them where to put it, told Janie to hold the committee there until he got back. He didn't want to miss them, but he meant to count every foot of that lumber before it touched the ground. He could have saved his breath, and Janie could have kept right on with what she was doing. In the first place, everybody was late in coming. Then, the next thing, as soon as they heard where Jody was, they kept right on up there where the new lumber was rattling off the wagon and being piled under the big live oak tree. So that's where the meeting was held, with Tony Taylor acting as chairman and Jody doing all the talking. A day was named for roads, and they all agreed to bring axes and things like that and chop out 2 roads running each way. That applied to everybody except Tony and Coker. They could carpenter. So Jody hired them to go to work on his store bright and soon the next morning. Jody himself would be busy driving around from town to town, telling people about Edenville and drumming up citizens to move there. Janie was astonished to see the money Jody had spent for the land come back to him so fast. 10 new families bought lots and moved to town in 6 weeks. It all looked too big and rushing for her to keep track of. Before the store had a complete roof, Jody had canned goods piled on the floor and was selling so much he didn't have time to go off on his talking tours. She had her first taste of presiding over it the day it was complete and finished. Jody told her to dress up and stand in the store all that evening. Everybody was coming sort of fixed up, and he didn't mean for nobody else's wife to rank with her. She must look on herself as the bell cow. The other women were the gang. So she put on one of her ball dresses and went up the new cut road, all dressed in wine-colored red. Her silken ruffles rustled and muttered about her. The other women had on percale and calico, with here and there a head rag among the older ones. Nobody was buying anything that night. They didn't come there for that. They had come to make a welcome. So Joe knocked in the head of a barrel of soda crackers and cut some cheese.
"Everybody, come right forward and make merry. I got it's my treat."
Jody gave one of his big he-he laughs and stood back. Janie dipped up the lemonade like he told her. A big tin cup full for everybody. Tony Taylor felt so good when it was all gone that he felt to make a speech.
"Ladies and gentlemen, we've come together and gathered here to welcome to our midst one who has seen fit to cast in his lot amongst us. He didn't just come himself, neither. He have seen fit to bring his, the light of his home, that is his wife, amongst us also. She couldn't look no more better and no nobler if she was the Queen of England. It's a pleasure for her to be here amongst us. Brother Starks, we welcome you and all that you have seen fit to bring amongst us. Your beloved wife, your stall, your land." A big mouthed burst of laughter cut him short. "That'll do, Tony," Lige Moss yelled out. "Mr. Starks is a smart man. We's all willing to acknowledge to that. But the day he come wagging down the road with 200 acres of land over his shoulders, I wants to be there to see it."
Another big blowout of a laugh. Tony was a little peeved at having the one speech of his lifetime ruined like that.
"All y'all know what was meant. I don't see how come..."
"'Cause you jump up to make speeches and don't know how," Elias said.
"I was speaking just all right before you stuck your bill in."
"No, you wasn't, Tony. You way out of jurisdiction. You can't welcome a man and his wife without you make comparisons about Isaac and Rebecca at the well, else it don't show the love between them if you don't."
Everybody agreed that that was right. It was sort of pitiful for Tony not to know he couldn't make a speech without saying that. Some tittered at his ignorance, so Tony said testily,
"If all them that's going to cut the monkey and done cut it and threw it, we'll thank Brother Starks for a respond."
So Joe Starks and his cigar took the center of the floor.
"I thank you all for your kind welcome and for extending to me the right hand of fellowship. I can see that this town is full of union and love. I mean to put my hands to the plow here and strain every nerve to make this our town the metropolis of the state. So maybe I better tell you, in case you don't know, that if we expect to move on, us got to incorporate like every other town. Us got to incorporate, and us got to have a mayor, if things is to be done and done right. I welcome y'all on behalf of me and my wife to this store and to the other things to come. Amen."
Tony led the loud hand clapping and was out in the center of the floor when it stopped.
"Brothers and sisters, since us can't never expect to better our choice, I move that we make Brother Starks our mayor until we can see further."
"Second that motion."
It was everybody talking at once, so there was no need of putting it to a vote.
"And now we'll listen to a few words of encouragement from Mrs. Mayor Starks."
The burst of applause was cut short by Joe taking the floor himself.
"Thank you for your compliments, but my wife don't know nothing about no speech making. I never married her for nothing like that. She's a woman, and her place is in the home."
Janie made her face laugh after a short pause, but it wasn't too easy. She had never thought of making a speech and didn't know if she cared to make one at all. It must have been the way Joe spoke out without giving her a chance to say anything one way or another that took the bloom off of things. But anyway, she went down the road behind him that night, feeling cold. He strode along, invested with his new dignity, thought, and planned out loud, unconscious of her thoughts.
The mayor of a town like this can't lay around home too much. The place needs building up. Janie, I'll get hold of somebody to help out in the store, and you can look after things whilst I drum up things otherwise.
Oh, Jody, I can't do nothing with no store less than you's there. I could maybe come in and help you when things get rushed, but, my God, I don't see how come you can. There ain't nothing at all to hinder you if you got a thimble full of sense. You got to. I got too much else on my hands as mayor. This town needs some light right now.
Uh-huh. It is a little dark right along here.
Of course it is. There ain't no use in scuffling over all these stumps and roots in the dark. I'll call a meeting about the dark and the roots right away. I'll sit on this case first thing.
The very next day, with money out of his own pocket, he sent off to Sears Roebuck and Company for the street lamp and told the town to meet the following Thursday night to vote on it. Nobody had ever thought of street lamps, and some of them said it was a useless notion. They went so far as to vote against it, but the majority ruled. But the whole town got vain over it after it came. That was because the mayor didn't just take it out of the crate and stick it up on a post. He unwrapped it and had it wiped off carefully and put it up on a showcase for a week for everybody to see. Then he set a time for the lighting and sent word all around Orange County for one and all to come to the lamp lighting. He sent men out to the swamp to cut the finest and the straightest cypress post they could find and kept on sending them back to hunt another one until they found one that pleased him. He had talked to the people already about the hospitality of the occasion. "Y'all know we can't invite people to our town just dry along so. I God, no. We got to feed them something. And 'tain't nothing people likes better than barbecue. I'll get one whole hog my own self. Seem like all the rest of y'all put together ought to be able to scrape up two more. Tell your women folks to do round about some pies and cakes and sweet potato pone.' That's the way it went, too. The women got together the sweets, and the men looked after the meats. The day before the lighting, they dug a big hole in back of the store and filled it full of oak wood and burned it down to a glowing bed of coals. It took them the whole night to barbecue the three hogs. Hambo and Pearson had full charge while the others helped out with turning the meat now and then, while Hambo swabbed it all over with the sauce. In between times, they told stories, laughed and told more stories, and sung songs. They cut all sorts of capers and whiffed the meat as it slowly came to perfection with the seasoning penetrating to the bone. The younger boys had to rig up the sawhorses with boards for the women to use as tables. Then it was after sunup, and everybody not needed went home to rest up for the feast. By 5 o'clock, the town was full of every kind of a vehicle and swarming with people. They wanted to see that lamp lit at dusk. Near the time, Joe assembled everybody in the street before the store and made a speech. "Folks, the sun is going down. The sunmaker brings it up in the morning, and the sunmaker sends it to bed at night. Us poor weak humans can't do nothing to hurry it up nor to slow it down. All we can do, if we want any light after the setting or before the rising, is to make some light ourselves. So that's how come lamps was made. This evening, we's all assembled here to light a lamp. This occasion is something for us all, to remember to our dying day. The first street lamp in a colored town. Lift your eyes and gaze on it. And when I touch the match to that lamp wick, let the light penetrate inside of you. And let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Brother Davis, lead us in a word of prayer. Ask a blessing on this town in a most particular manner. While Davis chanted a traditional prayer poem with his own variations, Joe mounted the box that had been placed for the purpose and opened the brazen door of the lamp. As the word amen was said, he touched the lighted match to the wick, and Mrs. Bogle's alto burst out in, "We'll walk in the light, the beautiful light. Come where the dewdrops of mercy shine bright. Shine all around us by day and by night. Jesus, the light of the world." They, all of them, all of the people, took it up and sang it over and over till it was wrung dry and no further innovations of tone and tempo were conceivable. Then they hushed and ate barbecue. When it was all over, that night in bed, Jody asked Janie, "Well, honey, how you like being Mrs. Mayor?"
"It's all right, I reckon. But don't you think it keeps us in a kind of strain?"
"Strain? You mean the cooking and waiting on folks?"
"No, Jody. It just looks like it keeps us in some way we ain't natural with one another. You's always off talking and fixing things, and I feels like I'm just marking time. Hope it soon gets over."
"Over, Janie? My God, I ain't even started good. I told you in the very first beginning that I aim to be a big voice. You ought to be glad, because that makes a big woman out of you."
A feeling of coldness and fear took hold of her. She felt far away from things and lonely. Janie soon began to feel the impact of awe and envy against her sensibilities. The wife of the mayor was not just another woman, as she had supposed. She slept with authority, and so she was part of it in the town mind. She couldn't get but so close to most of them in spirit. It was especially noticeable after Joe had forced through a town ditch to drain the street in front of the store. They had murmured hotly about slavery being over, but every man filled his assignment. There was something about Joe Starks that cowed the town. It was not because of physical fear. He was no fist fighter. His bulk was not even imposing as men go. Neither was it because he was more literate than the rest. Something else made men give way before him. He had a bow-down command in his face, and every step he took made the thing more tangible. Take, for instance, that new house of his. It had two stories, with porches, with banisters and such things. The rest of the town looked like servants' quarters surrounding the big house. And different from everybody else in the town, he put off moving in until it had been painted in and out. And look at the way he painted it, a gloaty, sparkly white, the kind of promenading white that the houses of Bishop Whipple, W.B. Jackson, and the Vanderpools wore. It made the village feel funny talking to him, just like he was anybody else. Then there was a matter of the spittoons. No sooner was he all set as the mayor, postmaster, landlord, storekeeper, then he bought a desk like Mr. Hill or Mr. Galloway over in Maitland with one of those swing-around chairs to it. What with him biting down on cigars and saving his breath on talk and swinging around in that chair, it weakened people. And then he spit in that gold-looking vase that anybody else would have been glad to put on their front room table.
said it was a spittoon, just like his used-to-be boss man used to have in his bank up there in Atlanta. Didn't have to get up and go to the door every time he had to spit. Didn't spit on his floor, neither. Had that golded-up spitting pot right handy. But he went further than that. He bought a little lady-sized spitting pot for Janie to spit in. Had it right in the parlor with little sprigs of flowers painted all around the sides. It took people by surprise because most of the women dipped snuff and, of course, had a spit cup in the house. But how could they know up-to-date folks were spitting in flowery little things like that? It sort of made the rest of them feel that they had been taken advantage of, like things had been kept from them. Maybe more things in the world besides spitting pots had been hid from them when they wasn't told no better than to spit in tomato cans. It was bad enough for white people, but when one of your own color could be so different, it put you on a wonder. It was like seeing your sister turn into a gator, a familiar strangeness. You kept seeing your sister in the gator and the gator in your sister, and you'd rather not. There was no doubt that the town respected him and even admired him in a way. But any man who walks in the way of power and property is bound to meet hate. So when speakers stood up when the occasion demanded and said, "Our beloved mayor," it was one of those statements that everybody says, but nobody actually believes, like, "God is everywhere." It was just a handle to wind up the tongue with. As time went on, and the benefits he had conferred upon the town receded in time, they sat on his store porch while he was busy inside and discussed him. Like one day after he caught Henry Pitts with a wagon load of his ribbon cane and took the cane away from Pitts and made him leave town. Some of them thought Starks ought not to have done that. He had so much cane and everything else. But they didn't say that while Joe Starks was on the porch. When the mail came from Maitland and he went inside to sort it out, everybody had their say. Sim Jones started off as soon as he was sure that Starks couldn't hear him. "It's a sin and a shame running that poor man away from here like that. Colored folks oughtn't to be so hard on one another." "I don't see it that way at all," Sam Watson said shortly. "Let colored folks learn to work for what they get like everybody else. Nobody ain't stopped Pitts from planting the cane he wanted to. Starks give him a job. What more do he want?" "I know that too," Jones said. "But Sam, Joe Starks is too exact with folks. All he got, he done made it off of the rest of us. He didn't have all that when he come here." "Yeah, but none of all this you see and you setting on wasn't here neither when he come. Give the devil his due." "But now, Sam, you know that all he do is big belly around and tell other folks what to do. He loves obedience out of everybody under the sound of his voice." "You can feel a switch in his hand when he's talking to you," Oscar Scott complained. "That chastising feeling he totes sort of gives you the prolapsus of the quaternary lining." "He's a whirlwind among breezes," Jeff Bruce threw in. "Speaking of winds, he is the wind and we's the grass. We bend whichever way he blows," Sam Watson agreed. "But at that, us needs him. The town wouldn't be nothing if it wasn't for him. He can't help being sort of bossy. Some folks needs thrones and ruling chairs and crowns to make their influence felt. He don't. He got a throne in the seat of his pants. What I don't like about the man is he talks to unlettered folks with books in his jaws," Hicks complained, "showing off his learning. To look at me, you wouldn't take it, but I got a brother passing up around O'Connor that got good learning. If he was here, Joe Starks wouldn't make no fool out of him like he do the rest of y'all. I often wonder how that little wife of his makes out with him, 'cause he's a man that changes everything, but nothing don't change him."
"You know, many's the time I done thought about that myself. He gets on every now and then when she make little mistakes around the store. What makes her keep her head tied up like some old woman around the store? Nobody couldn't get me to
tiny rag on my head if I had hair like that. Maybe he make her do it. Maybe he scared some of the rest of us men might touch it round that stove. It sure is a hidden mystery to me. She sure don't talk much. The way he rears and pitches in the stove sometimes when she make a mistake is sort of ungodly, but she don't seem to mind at all. Reckon they understand one another.
The town had a basket full of feelings, good and bad, about Joe's positions and possessions, but none had the temerity to challenge him. They bowed down to him, rather, because he was all of these things. And then again, he was all of these things because the town bowed down. Every morning, the world flung itself over and exposed the town to the sun. So Janie had another day, and every day had a store in it, except Sundays. The store itself was a pleasant place, if only she didn't have to sell things. When the people sat around on the porch and passed around the pictures of their thoughts for the others to look at and see, it was nice. The fact that the thought pictures were always crayon enlargements of life made it even nicer to listen to. Take, for instance, the case of Matt Bonner's Yellow Mule. They had him up for conversation every day the Lord sent, most especially if Matt was there himself to listen. Sam and Lige and Walter were the ringleaders of the mule talkers. The others threw in whatever they could chance upon. But it seemed as if Sam and Lige and Walter could hear and see more about that mule than the whole county put together. All they needed was to see Matt's long, spare shape coming down the street. And by the time he got to the porch, they were ready for him. "Hello, Matt."
"Evening, Sam." "Mighty glad you come along right now, Matt. Me and some others was just about to come hunt you."
"What for, Sam?"
"Mighty serious matter, man, serious."
"Yeah, man," Lige would cut in dolefully. "It needs your strict attention. You ought not to lose no time."
"What is it then? You ought to hurry up and tell me."
"Reckon we better not tell you here in the store. It's too far off to do any good. We better all walk on down by Lake Sebelia."
"What's wrong, man? I ain't after none of y'all's foolishness now."
"That mule of yourn, Matt. You better go see about him. He's bad off."
"Whereabouts? Did he wade in the lake and an alligator catch him?"
"Worse than that. The women folks got your mule. When I come round the lake about noontime, my wife and some others had him flat on the ground, using his sides for a washboard."
The great clap of laughter that they had been holding in bursts out. Sam never cracks a smile.
"Yeah, Matt, that mule's so skinny that the women is using his rib bones for a rub board and hanging things out on his hock bones to dry."
Matt realizes that they have tricked him again. And the laughter makes him mad. And when he gets mad, he stammers.
"You's a stinking lie, Sam. And your feet ain't mates. Oh, man, they don't use you getting mad. You know you don't feed the mule. How are you going to get fat?" "I just feed him. I give him a full cup of corn every feeding."
"Lige knows all about that cup of corn. He hid around your barn and watched you. Tain't no feed cup you measures that corn out of. It's a teacup."
"I does feed him. He just too mean for to get fat. He stay poor and raw bony just for spite. He's scared he'll have to work some."
"Yeah, you feeds him. Feed him off a come up and season it with rawhide."
"Just feed the ornery varmint. Don't care what I do, I can't get along with him. He fights every inch in front of the plow and even lay back his ears to kick and bite when I go into the stall to feed him."
"Get reconciled, Matt," Lige soothed. "Us all knows he's mean. I seen him when he took after one of them robbers chilling in the street and would have caught him and maybe trampled him to death if the wind hadn't changed all of a sudden. You see, the young'un was trying to make it to the fence of Starks' onion patch, and the mule was dead in behind him and gaining on him every jump. But all of a sudden, the wind changed and blowed the mule way off his course, him being so poor and everything, and before the ornery varmint could tack, the young'un had done got over the fence. The porch laughed, and Matt got mad again.
"Maybe the mule takes out after everybody," Sam said, "'cause he thinks everybody he hear coming is Matt Bonner coming to work him on an empty stomach."
"Oh, no, 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 no. You stop that right now," Walter objected. "That mule don't think I look like no Matt Bonner. He ain't that dumb. If I thought he didn't know no better, I'd have my picture took and give it to that mule so she could learn better. I ain't gonna allow him to hold nothing like that against me."
Matt struggled to say something, but his tongue failed him, so he jumped down off the porch and walked away as mad as he could be. But that never halted the mule talk. There would be more stories about how poor the brute was, his age, his evil disposition, and his latest caper. Everybody indulged in mule talk. He was next to the mayor in prominence and made better talking. Janie loved the conversation, and sometimes she thought up good stories on the mule. But Joe had forbidden her to indulge. He didn't want her talking after such trashy people. "Use Mrs. Mayor Starks, Janie. My God, I can't see what a woman of your stability would want to be treasuring all that gum grease from folks that don't even own the house they sleep in. Tain't no earthly use. There's just some puny humans playing round the toes of time." Janie noted that while he didn't talk the mule himself, he sat and laughed at it. Laughed his big he-he laugh, too. But then when Lige or Sam or Walter or some of the other big-picture talkers were using a side of the world for a canvas, Joe would hustle her off inside the store to sell something. Looked like he took pleasure in doing it. Why couldn't he go himself sometimes? She had come to hate the inside of that store anyway. That post office, too. People always coming and asking for mail at the wrong time. Just when she was trying to count up something or write in an account book. Get her so hackled, she'd make the wrong change for stamps. Then, too, she couldn't read everybody's writing. Some folks wrote so funny and spelt things different from what she knew about. As a rule, Joe put up the mail himself, but sometimes when he was off, she had to do it herself, and it always ended up in a fuss. The store itself kept her with a sick headache. The labor of getting things down off of a shelf or out of a barrel was nothing, and so long as people wanted only a can of tomatoes or a pound of rice, it was all right. But supposing they went on and said, "A pound and a half of bacon and a half pound of lard." The whole thing changed from a little walking and stretching to a mathematical dilemma. Or maybe cheese was 37 cents a pound and somebody came and asked for a dime's worth. She went through many silent rebellions over things like that. Such a waste of life and time. But Joe kept saying that she could do it if she wanted to, and he wanted her to use her privileges. That was the rock she was battered against. This business of the head rag irked her endlessly. But Jody was set on it. Her hair was not going to show in the store. It didn't seem sensible at all. That was because Joe never told Janie how jealous he was. He never told her how often he had seen the other men figuratively wallowing in it as she went about things in the store. And one night he had caught Walter standing behind Janie and brushing the back of his hand back and forth across the loose end of her braid ever so lightly so as to enjoy the feel of it without Janie knowing what he was doing. Joe was at the back of the store, and Walter didn't see him. He felt like rushing forth with a meat knife and chopping off the offending hand. That night, he ordered Janie to tie up her hair around the store. That was all. She was there in the store for him to look at, not those others. But he never said things like that. It just wasn't in him. Take the matter of the yellow mule, for instance. Late one night, Matt came from the west with a halter in his hand.
"Been hunting for my mule. Anybody seen him?"
he asked. "Seen him soon this morning over behind the schoolhouse," Lum said, "about 10 o'clock or so. He must have been out all night to be way over there that early."
"He was," Matt answered. "Seen him last night, but I couldn't catch him. I'm obliged to get him in tonight, 'cause I got some plowing for tomorrow. Done promised to plow Thompson's Grove."
"Reckon you'd ever get through the job with that mule frame?" Lige asked.
"Oh, that mule is plenty strong, just evil, and don't want to be led."
"That's right. They tell me he brought you here to this town. Say you started to McCanopy, but the mule had better sense and brung you on here."
"It's a lie. I set out for this town when I left West Florida."
"You mean to tell me you rode that mule all the way from West Florida down here?"
"Sure he did lie, but he didn't mean to. He was satisfied up there, but the mule wasn't. So one morning he got straddled the mule, and he took and brought him on off. Mule has sense. Folks up that way don't eat biscuit bread but once a week."
There was always a little seriousness behind the teasing of Matt. So when he got huffed and walked on off, nobody minded. He was known to buy side meat by the slice, carried home little bags of meal and flour in his hand. He didn't seem to mind too much so long as it didn't cost him anything. About half an hour after he left, they heard the braying of the mule at the edge of the woods. He was coming past the store very soon.
"Let's catch Matt's mule for him and have some fun."
"Now, Lum, you know that mule ain't aiming to let himself be caught. Let's watch you do it."
When the mule was in front of the store, Lum went out and tackled him. The brute jerked up his head, laid back his ears, and rushed to the attack. Lum had to run for safety. 5 or 6 more men left the porch and surrounded the fractious beast, goosing him in his sides and making him show his temper. But he had more spirit left than body. He was soon panting and heaving from the effort of spinning his old carcass about. Everybody was having fun at the mule baiting. All but Janie. She snatched her head away from the spectacle and began muttering to herself. "They ought to be ashamed of themselves, teasing that poor brute beast like they is. Done been worked to death, done had his disposition ruined with mistreatment, and now they got to finish deviling him to death. Wished I'd had my way with them all." She walked away from the porch and found something to busy herself with in the back of the store, so she did not hear Jody when he stopped laughing. She didn't know that he had heard her, but she did hear him yell out,
"Lum, my God, that's enough. You all done had your fun now. Stop your foolishness and go tell Matt Bonner I want to have a talk with him right away."
Janie came back out front and sat down. She didn't say anything, and neither did Joe. But after a while, he looked down at his feet and said,
"Janie, I reckon you better go fetch me them old black gaiters. These tan shoes sets my feet on fire. Plenty room in them, but they hurts regardless."
She got up without a word and went off for the shoes.
A little war of defense for helpless things was going on inside her. People were to have some regard for helpless things. She wanted to fight about it. But I hate disagreement and confusion, so I better not talk.